to light the incense and the candle. I leave it to Suyan to decide. I use the washroom first, then I come back.
Sad.
Compose the mind, develop your faith, sadha, virya, then we will start the puja. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Svakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then turn to page 4. We all commence the puja chanting. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Okay, we will now chant the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina ติโลกาติปังสัมพุทธังปูจายามิตโมนุดังกันดาสัมบรายุเตนะโดเปนะหังสุขังหินะปูจายะปูจานิยังตังปูจาบัจจานะมุตตมังวันนากันดาโกนุเปตังเอตังกสุมาสันตตินปูจายามิมุนินดาสสิริปาดาสารโรเหปูเจมิบุตตังกสุเมนาเนนาปุณเณนามัตเตนาเจโหทุโมคังปูปังมิลายัตติยัตตาอิตังเมคาโยตัตตายัตติวินาสภาวังอาดิวาเสตุโนบันเตปานิยังปริกาปิตังอนุกัมปังอุปาทายะปาติกังหาตุมุตตมังGet on to page 18. We will do the puja, aspiration. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind, to help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water.May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One.Who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers.May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana, making of overall aspiration.By the power of these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer of merits. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings. Exception.Especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect. Triple Jam. Buddhang Pujyemi. Dhammang Pujyemi.สังฆังปุจเจมิโอเค you all can be seated just relax body and mind yeah? then maintain some form of attention yeah?Then we can start the meditation. I understand there are two new people around. Eh? You are most welcome to join us. Eh? May I know the two of you? Can you show your hand? Oh, okay. You all have been to SGBA before? Oh, three. You all been to SGBA before? Oh, totally new to the Dhamma. Have you been exposed to any Buddhist teaching? No. Oh, Brother Leon has. Oh, okay. The other two are new.
Yeah, the three is actually one family.
Oh, family. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, sadhu. Okay. Anyway, don't worry. You don't know anything is the best. Not so complicated your mind. So they call it a clean slate. You can absorb better like a sponge. You only need to listen attentively. Then maybe on the way out, we will give you two booklets. One of them is teach you how to develop this meditation. The blue book. Then another one is the seminar paper that I delivered in Bangkok in the year 2013, August 2013. It's a very good seminar paper that explained to you how beautiful the Buddha Dhamma is. The Buddha Dhamma is the Buddha's teaching, how it can help you understand clearly who you are, and what is life all about. Then through this understanding, you will know how to live life. You need not have problem in life anymore. Then if you really have the affinity, the faith, the sincerity, and the diligence, then maybe there is condition, I don't know, the potential to become awakened or enlightened is possible. Then once you can realize that, I rejoice, because it will bring forth the understanding of life. Then for the first time in your life, you don't have to suffer anymore. You don't have to confront any situation in life with any more problem. There is no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety, no more sorrow and lamentation, no more unhappiness within your mind state. You always have clarity of mind, heedfulness within, peaceful clarity, and there is a lot of joy within. So these are something that you can realize. It's within our capacity as human beings to realize this understanding. Okay, so we call this Vipassana meditation. Means we are here to develop a type of meditation that can allow us to insight into the characteristics of all phenomena within this universe. According to the Buddha, all of phenomena within our existence or the whole universe may be physical phenomena, mental phenomena, or nature's phenomena. They exhibit three universal characteristics. The Buddha called it impermanent, leading to the suffering state when you deludedly grasp and cling. Then the last one is empty nature or non-self nature. Means all these phenomena, because they are conditioned arising causal phenomena, it is not a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. This one, according to the Buddha, is a very profound understanding, and if you have this understanding, you will not be deluded. There will be no more self-delusion. Then your mind, like liberate, then there is clarity and understanding. Okay, for those who know how to meditate, you can straight away start. Then for those who are new, I will teach you some skillful means to train your mind. Okay, we can off the line. Then just to explain a bit, I will elaborate on it later. The Buddha said the reason why most of us, as human beings, we are not able to have the inner peace and inner calmness to enable us to meditate, because there are five mental hindrances that hinders your mind. And these mental hindrances, they are very powerful. For most living beings who has not trained their mind or developed this meditation, their mind will be very, very heedless. They think a lot. It's very restless. And this hindrance hinders your mind from becoming peaceful. That's why they are called mental hindrance. And they are five. If you look at the whiteboard, the top right corner, your direction is the left, top left hand corner. The five mental hindrances, they are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, which is sleepiness of mind or lethargic mind. Then the fourth one is restlessness of mind. That's why your mind is restless, think a lot, worry a lot. When you have fear, worry, anxiety, unhappiness, sorrow and lamentation, your mind is very restless. You are not peaceful. That's why you cannot meditate. Then the last one is doubt, when you don't understand what is going on, when you don't know what the solution is. So that doubt haunts you, make you miserable, then make you lack confidence in yourself. So this mental hindrance, you need to develop the opposite five spiritual faculty to counter them. But most living beings, even as Buddhists, when you start your training, your spiritual faculty are not developed, not strong enough. That's why the hindrance are there. So we need to do something about it. But the moment you have developed the cultivation of the spiritual faculty, the hindrance will cease on its own. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to fight it. You don't have to suppress it. You don't have to control it or do anything with it. You just acknowledge it, understand that they are there because the spiritual faculty are not there. And spiritual faculty can be cultivated through puja. Just now we start with the opening puja, where we develop the faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then the virya, through understanding who the Buddha is and how wonderful his teaching is. So all this will give rise to the spiritual tenacity or spiritual zeal to walk this way, and this is the second spiritual faculty. First one is the faith in yourself, in the Buddha and his teaching. Then after that, it will drive you to cultivate mindfulness or sati. And this is the basis of meditation. Without mindfulness, you cannot meditate. And to be mindful is to be silent without thought. The moment you are silent without thought, you are already mindful. And whatever you do, your mind and the bodily activity or phenomena move as one, or the external phenomena move as one, then you are in sati. Mind and body as one without thought. So all this spiritual faculty, when it's developed, it will automatically help you overcome the hindrance. So for those who already know how to meditate, you go ahead. You need to train your mind, you train, no need, then you straight away move into the meditation. Now I'll give you instruction on how to develop the spiritual faculty or sati without having to depend on the five spiritual faculty. First, I will teach you a skillful means. We call it the mind sweeping method to decondition your heedless thinking, so that these five mental hindrances can be attenuated or reduced, so that it will not be active. Your thinking, your restlessness, your heedlessness, all this, you can decondition it so that the mind is peaceful. The mind is calm, relaxed and aware. Okay, you make sure you have a stable posture. You can cross your leg. If you can't, you can just leave it in whatever posture that you are comfortable. You can even leave it in front. Or if you got problem sitting, you can sit on a couch or a chair or lean against the wall. Then make sure you have a straight back. Then relax body and mind. Silent everything. Just relax. Then close your eye. Maintain attention at your forehead. Just feel your forehead. Don't think, feel. If you can detect any tension, any tightness or any stress within your forehead, you just relax them all. Relax, relax, and relax. You don't have to remember all these instructions because they are all in the transcript book, the blue book. Then after that, you move your attention to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel. Don't think. Feel. Then relax every part of your eye muscle. Then you shift your attention down to your facial muscle. Feel it. Every strand of your facial muscle. Feel it soothingly. Relax, relax, and relax. Relax the whole facial muscle. Then after that, to assist you further, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, you have joy, you have happiness. Your facial muscle, your body will relax on its own. Then you can radiate loving kindness to yourself by reciting, follow what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. As you recite, you must feel it with your feeling. When we say, may I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel with the mind, your body and mind, be well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within your entire body and mind, each and every cells within your body and mind. Feel it, soothingly, relax, happy and peaceful. Then you can repeat one or twice. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. May too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself peaceful and happy always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Then we can radiate this same metta to our loved one. May all our loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy. You can visualize your loved one. It can be your parents, your brothers, your sister, your good friend, or somebody who has good relationship or affinity with you. Then you radiate the same metta. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger, free from all negativity or thought. Then may their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can extend this same metta to all beings within this vicinity of Brother Sri An and Mi Fong's house, including all Kayanamitas, Dharma friends. May they all too be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can radiate this same metta to all beings. May all beings throughout the entire of Subang Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, and our planet Earth, then our entire solar system, galaxy, Milky Way, and the whole of the universe, our Mother Nature, may all beings throughout the entire universe or existence, may they all too be well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Now you can come back to feel your facial muscle. Just feel, don't think. Relax every part. Feel it soothingly relax. Then you sweep your mind down to your neck. Feel, relax. Shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder. Then you move your attention now to your heart area or your chest area. Relax everything and just feel. You can detect any vibration or your heartbeat. Then you just silence your mind and just stay there. But if you are new, if you are not sensitive, you have not trained your mind, it's okay. What you can do is like you feel your forehead, now you feel your heart area. Just feel and relax each and every part within your entire chest area. Feel it soothingly relaxed. Then you continue to sweep your mind down to your stomach. Feel relaxed. Then you sweep it down to your abdomen. Silent everything. Just feel. Then relax. Do the same for your leg. Feel, relax, buttock, feel, relax. Then you can repeat this whole of the mind sweeping method. Starting from your buttock, feel, relax every part. Your leg, feel, relax. Then your abdomen, just silent and feel, relax. Your stomach, do the same, feel, relax. Then your heart area, feel, relax and stay there if you can. Then after that, you move on to your shoulder. Feel, relax, hand, back to shoulder, neck. Then you move it up to your facial muscle again. Feel, relax every part. Feel it soothingly, relax, relax and relax. Then your eye muscle, relax, relax. Then your forehead, do the same. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. This is the quiet mind, the silent mind that can meditate. But this mind need to be stabilized. You need to stabilize this mind state, which is the inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness within. To help you develop the stability of it, the Buddha has recommended anapanasati. Anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So anapanasati is mindfulness of this in and out breath. It's very easy to train this mind to stabilize it. Like you feel your forehead, now you maintain attention in front of your nostril to feel your breathing. Then the moment you detect your breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Means the mind and the breathing, they are in perfect harmony and synchrony. When you are able to maintain mindfulness of the in and out breath without thought, you are developing anapanasati. Then your mind will settle down very fast. You will become very calm and very peaceful very fast. Then you will experience a type of spiritual joy or spiritual calmness, which they call piti. Piti is a type of spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, spiritual rupture that arises when the mind is peaceful when the mind is mindful without thought. If you are new initially, this mindfulness is not easy. The moment you try to maintain attention at the breathing, the thought will come in and interfere. Then it will take you away. Then you become like heedless, lost in thought. But don't worry. The moment you are aware that this thought has wandered off, you are no longer mindful of the in and out breath. You bring your attention back to your nostril, your breath. You must be patient. If you are patient, within 5 to 10 minutes, it should stabilize. Do not react to what happened. Do not become unhappy when the mind wanders off. Just tell yourself, the untrained mind is like that, it thinks a lot. It is heedless. So we have to train this mind. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Expect this mind to wander off many, many times. But be patient. Every time it wanders off, bring it back. Then not long, this training, anapanasati, will stabilize. When it stabilizes, there is a lot of calmness, there is a lot of joy, there is a lot of spiritual peace, inner calmness. Pity will arise. Then you continue to relax and maintain that mindfulness of the in and out breath. Pity will transform to become more and more subtle, more and more refined, until you experience a type of spiritual bliss they call sukha. Sukha is a very blissful mind state that will arise when you relax into it. When pity has been transformed to a more refined state of inner peace, which we call inner bliss or sukha. Then when sukha arises, you will experience that very blissful state and you will like to meditate. Then meditation becomes like very, very beautiful, very meaningful, and you like to stay in that state. But do not attach, do not cling to all this state. Just experience it and allow it to pass. Because whatever phenomena or mind state that arise, they are all condition arising. When condition is there, you will become like that. When condition cease to be, it will cease to be. So experience them. Develop the understanding of them. Then continue to relax and just maintain awareness. Later on, even this sukha, blissful state, they will come to pass. Then the mind will settle down into another more refined state of pasati. Pasati is the tranquility state of mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind. When the mind is in that state of pasati, it is very quiet, very still and very peaceful. There is no thought, no movement, nothing. When the mind is already in sati, when it has stabilized, pasati will arise. When pasati arises, you just relax, silent everything, and just maintain the awareness within. Then later on, many, many things that arise within your form and mind, you will understand. All of the Buddha Dhamma that the Buddha taught, you will experience them. All of the mind state that the Buddha described in his essential Dhamma or teaching, you will come to see them, realize them. Okay, I'll let you continue your meditation. And I will ring the bell after about 15 minutes. those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed or trained. These are the mind states that you need to use to develop the daily mindfulness, which is the real meditation. You have to carry forward these mind states into your daily life, to live your life, to cultivate the way for path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. The mind that is trained is very different. It listens to you. You want it to be peaceful, it will be peaceful. You want it to be silent, it will be silent. You want it to arise a thought, it will arise. Whereas the untrained mind think a lot, very heedless, very deluded with a lot of hindrance, mental hindrance. That mind is incapable of meditation. That mind got no clarity, no inner peace, no inner well-being, no inner awareness. That's why it think a lot. Okay, with that, we will continue with our invocation to the Deva. Turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the Devas. I will read the English translation. Invocation to the Devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or Devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to doctrine. This is the time to listen to doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine.
Samanta Chakravalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Saggamokkhadang Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayang Badanta
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti Beso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Nijira Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusana Buddho Bhagava Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachyapang Veditato Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Yu pati panno bhagavato savaka sangho Nyaya pati panno bhagavato savaka sangho Samichi pati panno bhagavato savaka sangho Yadidang chattari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sangho Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakineyo anjali karaniyo Anuttarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we'll pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhang Pichemi Dhammang Pachemi Sanghang Pachemi. Okay, you can be seated. Now is our second session is reporting of meditation, followed by whatever question that you have, you can ask. Question related to meditation, the Dhamma or the teaching, or anything that you want to develop clearer understanding so that you can understand how to help you apply what you have learned here, the teaching, the meditation, to help you overcome whatever life situation or problem that you encounter, you can also ask. Okay, now we open it up. Yeah. So make full use of the opportunity. You just have to raise your hand if you want to report your meditation or ask any question, then we will pass you the mic. Okay, now we open it up to the floor. Anybody wants to report meditation or ask any question, you can. Yeah. Anybody? Yeah. Oh, very quiet as usual. So if you are quiet, then you cannot learn because you don't report your meditation, and I don't know what is it that you all want me to brief you on. The other possibility is everybody understood, so no question. That was the best one if you can have that understanding. Otherwise, you better make full use of this condition to report your meditation. You don't have to worry about your meditation. No such thing as bad meditation or lousy meditation. Whatever that happened to you over the last hour or so, you just describe them sincerely, candidly, and that is your meditation. And from there you can learn many, many things. If you are shy and you dare not ask or report your meditation, then you won't learn. Okay, one more time. Where is the mic? Oh, it'll be there. So anybody wants to report meditation? Maybe. What about the new people? Yeah. You want to report your meditation? Just now, the last half an hour or so. You want to describe? Share with us what happened. What did you do? Or maybe pass to the one, the meditator at the back, the new one. Brother Leong, yeah. you want to share your experience, you just describe how you develop the meditation just now. Yeah. Push it up. There's a button. Push it all the way up. Okay.
For me, I practice in the morning for about every day. Yes?
Oh, very good.
30 to 40 minutes. Yeah,
before oh, that's I go very to work. Good.
And try to relate my experience tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
very good.
It's slightly better. Yeah, I think slightly better. I felt how to say that. The breathing is a bit more
More natural now.
More natural.
Sadhu.
It comes to the calm state. Rather fast. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
So
very good. That is a good sign of progress. Means the anapanasati you have already developed until quite natural. Then you become very peaceful and very calm very fast.
Yeah.
That is good sign of progress. Means you have actually started to master anapanasati. Then
and
after that, what happened?
And also I didn't take so much food. Yes, maybe.
Oh, very good. Very good. You are right.
Anyway.
After anapanasati calm, you don't really need to eat.
Okay.
Because that spiritual calmness and spiritual peace and joy will make you very happy. A lot of joy. Then your body like recuperate. You become very different. Like you don't need much sleep after that. You have a lot of clarity. You are more calm most of the time. Then you like to go back and meditate. Very good, Sadhu. Oh, that's it. Okay. Very good. Thank you so much for your sharing, Brother Leong. See? This is the fruit of his hard work. Press down the button. Press it down. Otherwise, this recorder, there is some distortion. So very good. Thank you so much for the sharing, reporting. We all should rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. See, at least this is very good sharing and very sincere. That's why if you really put in the what they call diligence, means your religious routine, like you say, every morning he has been doing the meditation, and it's not 15, 20 minutes. Or 30 minutes, about 40 to 45 minutes. And this is very good training. The mind that is heedless with the hindrance need to be trained. Then later on, as you understand the Buddha Dhamma, as you develop the meditation, you will become very different. Then you start to appreciate the Buddha Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha. Then you start to understand more and more. Then you will know what to do. And then you realize the spiritual faculty is the one that makes you different. So just now I didn't elaborate much. Maybe now I will make use of the condition to explain further. So you look at these two essential Dhamma chart. The first one is Pancha Nivarana in Pali, or they call it the five mental hindrances. The Buddha said these are the things that hinders your mind or prevent your mind from becoming peaceful, from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So whenever there are these hindrances, you cannot develop the peace within. You cannot develop the calm mind, the meditative mind. So they are called mental hindrances. And you only need to acknowledge this and understand that this is the cause of the lack of peace, your inability to meditate, your inability to abide within, to develop the inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So what are these? These are the things that normal human beings, throughout the day, they arise, a lot of them. We call them putujana, or unenlightened living beings. So if this unenlightened living being do not train their mind and keep on allowing these five mental hindrances to arise, then this become their habitual thinking. They will think along this particular way. That's why the Buddha said heedless thinking. And to the Buddha, the heedless eyes if they, because spiritually you don't stand a chance. You continue living your life this way, you will never stand a chance to become enlightened, because the heedless eyes if dead means spiritually you don't have a chance at all. You are like spiritually dead, even though you are alive, living life, or conscious of life, not really living life. You existed through life, you never live, because this is heedless living. You don't have mindfulness, you don't have awareness, you don't have heedfulness. You are not clear what is going on in life. You become mechanical, repetitive. So this is a very dangerous way of living life. The Buddha said, if you are heedless, you make a lot of mistakes. You suffer a lot. You become miserable. That's why this mental hindrance become very powerful. So now I will try to explain slowly. The first two is a pair. The first two are called sensual desire and ill will. So from the word sensual desire, you know, these are sense experience that you experience in life, like every moment of seeing something or hearing something, smell, taste, tactile, tactile consciousness, when you tactile feel something, or your mind arise certain type of thought or mind state. They will condition you. If you like that sense experience, like you will like something you hear, very nice melody or music, or nature's vibration, or some very beautiful sight, or you recall through mind some very pleasant, good experiences or memory, then you have desire for that sense experience to be repeated or to last longer. So when you do that, what happened to your mind? Your mind is no longer aware, no longer within the moment to understand life, to see clearly, to experience life, to see things as they are. But your mind is distracted, preoccupied with that sense experience, then you get yourself lost in it. That's why this mind that is no longer mindful or aware is lost in thought, lost in that sense experience, means it's preoccupied with that sense experience. Either you are describing it or attached to it, develop craving out of it, then that chain of thought continue. Then that movement of the mind is without awareness, is heedless. So likewise, if the opposite arise, when you hear something that you don't like noise, or when people say something bad about you, backbite, blame you, scold you, or develop all the negativity or speech, or you see somebody whom you don't like, or you have a lot of fear towards, then what happened? Or you recall an unhappy thought, or that thought condition the phobia that you had in the past. Or when you project your mind, the fear arises. You worry about things that has not happened. You worry about the future. What happened when people come to know? What happened when the court case start? What happened when the truth come out and all those things? When the mind react to this sense experience negatively, it will have anger, hatred. Then it will also have dislike, unhappiness, envy, jealousy. Then sometimes fear, intense fear. Then sometimes because of that fear, it makes your mind restless. Because when there is fear, the mind becomes restless. Why? Because fear is normally linked to worry, anxiety. Without worry and anxiety, there is no fear. Like fear of death, fear of your loved one having problem, fear of losing your job, fear of your loved one doesn't love you anymore. means the separation that may arise toward relationship breakdown or failure. Then sometimes it's divorce and other things. So these are the mind state that constantly arise within the living being. Every moment of sense experience, when you see something, you either like it or you don't like it. That's how sensual desire you will come about. When you hear something, it's the same. When you experience something, it's the same. So sensual desire, you will, is your reaction to life, to sense experience, your like and dislike, your pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your duality of mind. The moment you stir and react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, sensual desire, you will arise. And this is how your conditioned mind behaves, but without you realizing it. So what happens is, if you do this so often throughout the day, it becomes habitual. Understand not? And when it becomes habitual, what happened to you? Means throughout the day, you either like or dislike, pleasant or unpleasant, you are never at peace. You don't have equanimity. You always complain. You always react, get angry, emotional, unhappy, or become fearful. Of course, there are also moments when things go your way, you become like very happy. You have some worldly joy, worldly happiness. Then you become like very excited. Then you want to celebrate, you want to go for a drink. Then you want to call up your loved one. So these are the things that constantly happen in the mind of living beings that are not trained, that don't have the understanding of this teaching. Because of that, their mind develops this habitual tendency. So it becomes a habit throughout the day. If you arise this hindrance, it will hinder you from becoming peaceful, from becoming calm, from becoming aware. So this type of living is dangerous because you will not be able to have even a single moment of peace. You are not able to train this mind so that it can have this inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness within, so that you can abide within to recuperate, to recover from your tired day, your stressful day, to develop the inner peace, the inner calmness, to allow your body and mind to recuperate. You don't have that ability or possibility. That's why throughout the day, you are like very stressed out, very tired. And when you think a lot, you use up a lot of mental energy. That's how it drains you. Then when you know how to meditate, you hardly think. You only mindful. That's why your energy is all conserved within and is used internally to recuperate you, to bring about the inner peace, the inner calmness, and the good vibration for you to overcome all of your negative energy field, like your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your phobia, your unhappiness. These are all deep state of negativity, negative energy field that will cause your immune system to break down, that will make you very sick. That's how people develop cancer and other things. So if you want to overcome all this, you have to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculties so that your mind state are different. So from a heedless way of living, you transform to become a heedful way of living. When you are heedful, the spiritual faculty are there. You become very calm, very peaceful. The habitual tendency cease to be. Your like and dislike all, you know, got no meaning. They come about because of your mental conditioning, your views and your opinion of things, because you cannot accept them for what they are. You cannot accept the world for what it is. You want things your way. You have craving. You have desire. That's how you become afflicted, miserable. When you cannot get what you want, you are affected. You become unhappy. Then you worry about it, or you become miserable over it. The third one is sloth and torpor, or sleepiness, lethargic mind. when you don't see the importance of this training, the moment you want to meditate, you feel sleepy. Most people initially, when they start, they feel sleepy. Even certain meditators who has done for quite a while, they still have this hindrance they cannot overcome. So sloth and torpor is heedfulness. Sloth and torpor is sleepiness, lethargic mind. The mind that is sluggish, lethargic. Then the fourth hindrance is the worst. This one most people have. Because when you don't live your life properly, means when you violate the moral rules, the moral principle of life, may be spiritual or society's rule. When you violate all the society's rule or traffic rule, police will come after you. And when you break your precept, you violate spiritual rules. Either or, it will bring about problem to you. Like you kill somebody, you harm somebody, you cheat, you deceive, or you commit sexual misconduct, you scare your spouse come to know, you scare your loved one comes to know, or you lie, you cheat, you deceive, and do all those funny things, or misappropriate CBT or other thing. Then when you have problem, you partake in intoxicant, you drink, you try to forget about the thing by drowning your sorrow. But the problem still remains. So all this will bring about the lowering of consciousness. It will make you like drunk, then you violate all the five precepts. So people who did a lot of this thing, who violates the moral rules and precepts, and even society's rule, they get themselves into trouble. Then what happened? They have a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, a lot of problem. That's why their mind is restless. They are never at peace. They worry about this, they worry about that. But they're scared the police will come after them. They're scared the people whom they harm, they kill, or they cheat come to know about it. Or their wife, or their spouse come to know about it. So all this lead to this hindrance. And when you have restlessness, born of your fear, worry, anxiety, you become miserable. Sometimes when you are not in good health, then the doctor diagnosed possibility of certain traumatic disease like cancer, then the biopsies come out. The moment the doctor tells you it's positive, your whole mind state is affected. You become miserable, fearful, unhappy. You got a lot of worry, a lot of stress, a lot of unhappiness. That's why you become restless. Then you don't know what to do. Yeah. Then the worst is, you develop the last hindrance. You have a lot of doubt. You don't know what to do. You don't know who to trust. You don't know who to go to. And there is so much fear. And the fear is a very negative energy field. So this hindrance make you miserable, make you heedless. Then you have so much suffering and misery, lack of peace. If you understand that this is the one affecting you, then you tell yourself, how can I come out of this? That's why this type of meditation is very important. It allows you to understand this, that straight away you realize this meditation or the Buddha's teaching, he tells you, you don't have to worry about this hindrance. You don't have to fight it. You don't have to control your fear, suppress your fear, your restlessness, your sensual desire, ill will. You don't go and do things like those gullible people. Oh, I don't want to have sensual desire, ill will. Well, these are hindered. Then you suppress, you control. You don't want to end. They cause the good experience of life. You like suppress your feeling. You don't want to allow it to come up. And that is the wrong practice. That is not what the Buddha teach. The Buddha say you can have them, but you don't be deluded by it. You don't attach, cling, and hold, because this will cause you a lot of suffering. You can just experience them and acknowledge them and understand that they are conditioned. Right? When there is condition for you to have good life, have it, like good food, eat can have the good food and experience it. Yeah, this is something that you have developed through your own, what they call life condition, means you can afford it and you have the condition to have it. Why not? But don't attach, don't cling, don't grab, so that in future when there is no condition to have good food, don't become miserable. And that is the teaching. It doesn't mean you cannot have good food, you cannot have good life, you cannot have all the happiness that living being can develop. No, you can. But the only thing you must understand is you don't attach, cling and grab and hold and make yourself miserable. Your mind will not stir like before. Means you understand when there is condition to have it, you just experience it, have it, and do whatever you want with it. But don't be deluded by it. Don't be gullible over it. Yeah. So spiritual faculty is very important. You only need to cultivate this, then automatically this fire will disappear. It will cease to be on its own. Now I will explain a little bit more. The Buddha said, the first thing that can make you strong is faith, confidence. Even in your worldly life, it's the same. This is spiritual. But in the worldly life, it's the same. When you have faith in yourself or confidence in yourself, they used to say in the English, saying, half the battle is won. True or not? When you are confident. But when you are not confident, you go for interview, you go for exam. No. When you have faith, you are not stressful. Like you prepare for your exam already. What happened? You're very confident in that. You won't got stress anymore. You don't have exam phobia anymore. You don't have to worry about, wow, today paper, how I'm not prepared yet. No. Or you go and spot question. You spot this few question. Exam question paper come out? None. It's like that. You panic, open. Or they tell you this one. You go and buy. They say leak paper. Wow, you study, prepare. Then you didn't study the rest. You go in, the paper come out, another one. Then you panic. But if you have prepared, what type of paper come out, so you're confident. That's why you have faith, you have confidence. But when it comes to spiritual faith, it's different. The Buddha said, you not only have faith and confidence in yourself, you must have faith and confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. And these two are very important entity that you have to develop the faith. Because the Buddha is a very, very special being, very unique. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened, means he has perfected himself over eons and eons of cultivation until he becomes the fully enlightened one. Not only enlightened, but complete in enlightenment. Means you can say at that time when he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. That's why he has this unique nine great virtue. He can teach any being, even the gods up there. He is a guide incomparable. And he is a teacher of man and God, endowed with perfect wisdom and virtue. He is the Bhagava, the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. All this will develop a very strong faith in you to have such a great being as your teacher and your guide. You will have that very strong gratitude and respect towards him. That's why your faith in him becomes very, very different. Then when you come to understand that he teaches a type of teaching that can enable you to awaken your mind, liberate your mind, and become enlightened so that you don't have to suffer anymore, so that you got no more problem with life, so that everything becomes so beautiful, life becomes so meaningful, so beautiful, then your faith in him becomes unshakable. Then you tell yourself, that's it. You determine to walk this way, to cultivate this teaching. Then this inner energy, which is a type of spiritual zeal, the second spiritual faculty will arise. Because this will drive you when you see the importance of this meditation. Because it involves your life, your whole existence. To be happy or to be miserable depend on this understanding. So you will go all out to cultivate. And because of your faith in the Buddha, this virya will be very strong. It will drive you. It will arise the spiritual tenacity in you to walk this way, to cultivate his teaching. Then when you do that, automatically you will meditate. And when you meditate, like what we do here, we train our mind to develop sati, or mindfulness. And mindfulness is awareness before the knowing. When you are without thought, when you are just relaxed and aware, you are already mindful. Without thought, you are naturally mindful. So don't try to be mindful. The trying is the thought. When the thought is active, you cannot be mindful. That's why when you pay respect, body and mind move as one. There is mindfulness. The faith is there. Then when you stand, like the Buddha said, you aware. The mind is aware of your posture. When you walk, body and mind as one, there is awareness. When you sit, body and mind as one, there is awareness. Then when you lie down, it's the same. Then everything you do, whatever that comes within your field of vision, hearing, perception, you develop mindfulness over it. Yeah. Initially, you anchor them to your physical body, then external phenomena, then later to all your mental states, mental perception, then your feeling, then your content of consciousness, then all of the teaching, the Dhamma. These are the four foundations of mindfulness that you maintain mindfulness. So once you do this, this sati will develop either through the mind sweeping method combined with metta, then anapana sati. That's why under the four foundations of mindfulness, the first training the Buddha asks you to develop is anapana sati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. That is to train your mind to be mindful. The moment it is mindful, it has sati. This is a spiritual faculty. Then when you stabilize it, it becomes samadhi. Samadhi is the collectedness of mind, the unwearying mind. When you have samadhi, you can see things as they are. Because when you are aware without thought, and your mind is collected and unwavering, you can see things as they are. Means at the moment of sense experience, when you hear something or you see something, your mind does not stir, does not waver. It is stable. Even lightning strike, it is stable. There is clarity. Even in the midst of commotion, riot, war, whatever, there is clarity. There is awareness within. The mind doesn't waver. And that is samadhi. That's why when you train until this sati become very stable, samadhi will develop. Then with sati and samadhi, you will be able to see things as they are. Not conditioned by what your views and opinion tell you. You don't see according to your conditioned mind, your views, your opinion, and your habitual tendency. You see reality because your mind does not stir. Your mind does not waver. It's collected. It does not think. That's why it can see things as they are. Then it can insight into phenomena and awaken to the three characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self. Then it can understand many, many things. That's how it develops understanding or what they call wisdom. So wisdom is the last of the five spiritual faculties. When you have these five developed, you are always mindful, heedful, collected, your mind. Then this wisdom will allow you to have right view, right understanding, to live life. The Noble Eightfold Path starts with right view, the three spiritual laws that governs life and existence. You will develop the right view. That is the law of karma, the law of the mind, and the law of Dhamma. Karma niyama, citta niyama, and Dhamma niyama. So when you develop this right view, you will understand life, and you will know how to live life. Then you will know how to do your duty very well. Then you will understand who you are, what you are. Then you will be able to liberate this mind so that it will not be deluded like before. Then you will not attach and cling to this so-called four or my mind or the human being. You are not deluded by it, because this one is karmically conditioned for you to use to live. This is not you. That's why we went through the last two Thursday. I draw this human being, physical body and a consciousness trapped inside. So you are this physical body and mind, that consciousness trapped inside. But we call this one the I and the me. Then you say, I see, I hear, I smell, I taste, I tactile feel and think. So who is this I? Who is this I? If you believe it's you, then the Buddha says it's self-delusion. You don't understand who you are, what you are. Then when you are deluded, you will have a lot of problems. When you attach to this physical body or physical form, you will worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. That's why you have problem. That's why fear, worry, anxiety can arise. Then you attach to all your feeling, your emotion, whatever you come to perceive through your senses. Then whatever views and opinion or mental state that you hold on to, cling on to, you suffer, you become miserable. That if you believe all of the things that you see through your consciousness, through what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, then you become deluded, because these are all conditioned arising entity having the characteristics of impermanence. You attach, cling and grasp, suffering will arise. And because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent and changing entity that you can call, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. There is no such thing, the Buddha said. This is self-delusion. When you meditate with a spiritual faculty, you will see clearly your four aggregates of mind, which is your feeling, perception, activity of mind, and consciousness. Or in Pali, they call Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. Then within this mind aggregate, we call it the thought. There is also the aggregate of form. That's why it's also the five mental aggregates of form and mind. How does the form enter the mind? It's through your mental perception. When you perceive them through your memory. Yeah. Like my voice, how do you perceive it? Through your hearing consciousness. Yeah. Through memory, yeah. Because you have trained, you have developed this education. Then you can understand English. Yeah. Then the other thing is also the external form that you see within your field of vision, like the lighting, the whiteboard, the writing on the whiteboard, the Buddha Rupa, even my physical appearances. These are external form, physical form. How does it enter your mind? How does it enter your mind? Through your perception. You can perceive me, you can perceive the Buddha image, you can perceive the whiteboard, the writing, everything, the lighting. Then you can perceive what I say through this hearing consciousness. So this perception is a quality of mind that brings external form into the mind. That's why the external form together with these four mental aggregate becomes the five aggregate of form and mind. And this is mental. And this is what the Buddha meant in the dependent origination, dwelling, paticca-samuppada. Not the first aspect as a human being. So all this you don't have to remember, because it's in the transcript, it's in the teaching. You only have to read through them, especially the Heart Sutta text. Then listen to the recording. It has been repeated many times, but if you spend time listening to it, contemplating into it, reflecting into it, then you will understand this very clearly. And this is the one that can allow you to break free your mind. This is the one that they can trigger off enlightenment. The whole of Anatta Lakkhana Sutta center on this self-delusion. So when you understand and penetrate this, you will awaken. Now I come back to the five spiritual faculty. How it can help you overcome the five hindrances. So now we start off with faith, confidence. When you have faith in yourself, confidence in the Buddha and his teaching, what happens? You become very calm and very composed, right? Because that faith will do away with doubt. you got no more doubt. You are now very confident of yourself, and you know what is the truth. You know what is the teaching. You know what is the Dhamma. You are no longer deluded. That's why this faith in the Buddha and his teaching will set you very stable. Your mind become very calm, very composed, because you are very confident now. You know the teaching. You know the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. You understand what constitutes suffering. The First Noble Truth of suffering that explained to you clearly the prevalence of suffering, the reality of life and existence that can trigger of suffering. Then you understand the cause behind all this suffering via the Second Noble Truth. Then with the understanding of the Third Noble Truth, you realize the Buddha said, suffering need not be if I have this understanding, if I have this teaching. And Nibbana, which is the enlightenment, can be realized in the here and the now before you die. And that will give you a lot of confidence, a lot of faith. And it will actually motivate you. Then the last Noble Truth is the Noble Eightfold Path. The Buddha didn't only tell you it's possible to become enlightened. He even tell you how to become enlightened. He said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which is the teaching or the meditation that he has taught the living being, he said, if you cultivate them, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Means no more suffering. So when you meditate to develop the wisdom to awaken, when you are enlightened, you will have no more suffering. That's why that is the meditation. So when you understand this Four Noble Truths, you don't have any more doubt. You have a lot of confidence in yourself. Then when your mind is very calm and very composed, you will have less of this restlessness, little or no more. Till your mind is very calm, very composed. Then when you develop virya, what happens? The spiritual zeal, the spiritual tenacity, you will not be sleepy, sloth and torpor, no more. Because when you already see the importance of this teaching, the importance of developing this understanding, so that in future you don't have to suffer anymore, you will go all out and do it, and you will not be sleepy. That's why sloth and torpor will be gone. Then when you have mindfulness, sati, there is no thought. No thought means what? No thought means what? When you don't think, you don't have fear, you don't have worry, you don't have anxiety, you don't have sensual desire, you don't have like and dislike, or pleasant and unpleasant. So when you are in sati, you are very peaceful. That's why sati will lead to spiritual calmness, piti, spiritual joy, spiritual rapture, the calm state of mind. That's why this is a spiritual faculty that make you peaceful. Develop inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. And this is a meditative mind. This is a silent mind. And this one, when it arises, sensual desire, you will no more. Restlessness, also no more. That's why you got no more problem. Then after that, when this one stabilizes, even when you are not meditating, in a formal meditation, when you come out of it and live life in your daily life, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think, even lightning strike, your mind is collected and unwavering. That's why there is no sensual desire and ill will. That's why you become very different in the midst of life. Then you realize most of the time you are just aware. Your mind is so different. Then when you develop the wisdom, there is understanding. There is what they call upeka or equanimity enlightenment factor, the last of the seven factors of enlightenment. They will arise. And when they arise, all these five disappear because they cannot arise. So the spiritual faculty, they are very powerful. That's why you have to develop this. And how do you develop this? Through your puja, through your constant reflection and contemplation of who the Buddha is. That's why you chant the salutation to the Buddha. Then you chant the salutation to the Dhamma so that you understand how unique and how special the Buddha is and his teaching. Then later you will also come to develop the clear understanding of the third gem, which is the Aryan Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. So the first two are the first two refuge that you take. The triple gem, they are the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, the Aryan disciple. So these are the three important gem that you must have affinity with, because within this triple gem, this is the only place you can find the teaching. That's why it's called refuge safe. All the other refuge, they are not safe, because they don't have the Four Noble Truths. If you take refuge with the Buddha, he is the fully enlightened one, he sure has the teaching. If you take refuge with his teaching, the Dhamma, you will also surely understand the Dhamma, have affinity with the Dhamma. Then you take refuge with the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, because they are enlightened. They also will have the teaching. That's why the triple gem, they are very important. And you must constantly reflect, contemplate, and understand their significance, understand their uniqueness, their beauty. Then your faith in them become unshakable, very, very strong. Okay, so this is what you need to know, if you are new. And this is something for you to take home. Hopefully, it can stimulate you to develop the interest to understand this teaching. Then there are some books later on, if you have the interest, you can come back, you can get them, they are all for free distribution. Then finally, when you have the condition or affinity to understand this teaching, you will never, never regret having lived your life this way. So this is something that living being can really find meaning in life. Without this, living being suffer. Living being can become afflicted, miserable, and suffering is very real. That's why without this teaching, without the Buddha's teaching, without the Buddha Dhamma, miserable living being can really become very, very miserable. And like his first noble truth, he proclaimed to the world, he said, suffering is everywhere, prevalence of suffering. And there are eight conditions that can give rise to suffering. And these eight conditions are the realities of life and existence. You look at them, they concern life, every aspect of your life. They are never apart from these eight conditions. So the Buddha summarized them very well. In short, under the final summary, the last one is it. It is because of your self-delusion. When you grasp and cling on to this so-called human being or living being, due to your self-delusion, born of your ignorance, suffering will arise, the Buddha said. When you deludedly grasp and cling to this fiery gate of form and mind, you become miserable. And this is a very powerful final summary, because like the Buddha said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything comes to be. And your mind, which is that thought, or the egoic mind, or the mundane mind, or your thinking mind, that is the five mental aggregates of form and mind. So if you deludedly grasp and cling and hold and believe this is you, you will have a lot of problems. That's how that thought can project and give you hell. Trigger of a lot of fear, worry, anxiety. All your problems come from your thought, your thinking. But human beings never inquire. It's just a thought. And what is a thought? Just a consciousness arises and pass away. How come it has such power to make living beings so miserable? All of those that have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, and depression, they all hit all this because of their thought. They think the wrong thought. They don't have the understanding and the wisdom. They grasp, cling, and believe the thought. They get themselves entangled over this five aggregate of form and mind. That's why self-delusion is very, very dangerous. Yeah. It can make you miserable. Okay, hopefully this is enough for most of you tonight. What's the time now? Oh, 10:05. We still got 20 to 25 minutes. Okay. All the 8 conditions. Okay, okay. How many of you haven't heard of the Four Noble Truths? Everybody heard before? Oh, you haven't heard of, I'll explain to you. You see, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. It will be explained in the seminar paper. The seminar paper is very useful. It's all inside there. But I will explain it to you all. You see, the Buddha said, if you want to understand life, if you want to understand who you are, what you are, and what this universe is all about, then you only have to have this understanding of his teaching. He teaches this Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths is actually the essence of his teaching. Oh, never mind. See, I write here. Four Noble Truths. You see, the Buddha came to understand that there are 5 nature's law or nature's universal law, or they call it the universal order of life that governs all of life and existence in this whole universe. He called it the 5 Pancha Niyama. Pancha in Pali is 5. Niyama are universal order. The first 2 is scientific. He called it physical order of nature or Utu Niyama. The second is biological order of nature or Bija Niyama. Now, this first 2 is scientific law. The scientists are very good at it. They have penetrated quite deep into it. And because of that, science and technology has revolutionized our civilization. Over the past 30 to 40 years, we have advanced tremendously because of our understanding of these 2 laws. That's how our civilization progressed and transformed. So likewise, the Buddha, he is an expert in the next 3 laws. The next 3 laws are spiritual laws, which the scientists cannot understand. That's why in the spiritual field, the scientists cannot penetrate. These 3 laws are related to our mind, related to our consciousness. That's why the scientist has actually progressed in the other aspect very, very advanced. They have developed the understanding of gravity. That's why they understand what gravity is, electromagnetic wave. Then they can also understand earlier on the Newtonian mechanics, Newton's law and all those things. Then later on, when Einstein came, he came out with the theory of relativity. Then time become the 4th dimension. Means time is relative, as explained by this equation. Time is defined as the square root of 1 minus your speed over the speed of light square. This one is proven. That's why when you travel at the speed of light, your speed over the speed of light is almost 1. Square of 1 is 1. 1 minus 1 is indeterminate. That's why time is arrested. No time. They have proven it. They have used the particle accelerator to accelerate those particles with very short life, half-life. Then they realize they exist much longer than their half-life. Then they realize time is arrested. That's why you don't age. You travel at the speed of light or near to the speed of light. So these are all scientific laws. What the Buddha has penetrated are the three spiritual law, and this constitute the three right views. First one is law karma. He say each and every living being in this universe, we are all born of our karma, had our karma condition, and supported by our karma. You are what you are because of your karma. This is a nature's law. That's why he asked the monk, every day you must contemplate. This is the last of the five contemplation. Then, after that, you have the second law. They call it law of mind, citta niyama. Law of karma is karma niyama. Then, not only you are born of it, head to it, condition supported by it. The Buddha said, the law of karma is moral causation. If your mental intention is negative or evil root, then suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follows the hood, and that is Dhammapada, worst one. But if you train your mind to be heedful, to be mindful, then you act, speak, and think with a heedful mind, with a wholesome mind, pure mind, free of the evil root of greed, hatred, and delusion, and then happiness will follow you, like the shadow that never leaves you. So this is what the law of karma is about. Do good because good, do evil because evil. That's why never, never plant the seed of evil. If you plant the wrong seed, you will reap the wrong fruit. That's why the Mahayana saying is very good. He said, 众生千万要小心, 不要种错因结错果. Because they say, you plant the seed of wholesomeness, you will reap the fruit of wholesomeness. 种善因结善果, 种恶因结恶果. So you plant the seed of negativity, suffering will follow you. You will reap the fruit of negativity. So this is how the Buddha's teaching come about. That's why when you know this law of karma, the Buddha said, you must take care of karma because it plays such a great role in your life. That's how the advice of the Buddha come about. How do you take care of karma? You have to avoid all evil, do good, purify your mind. So how do you avoid all evil? You have to keep your precept, like what I say, so that the mental hindrance are not there. That's why precept is out of love and compassion for you so that you don't break this karma or coming negativity. All of your action, speech, and thought process, moral causation, you don't keep your precept. Because if you were to go through mindfully about the precept, who kill, who harm, who cheat, who deceive, who commit sexual misconduct and all those things, or who lie, or partake intoxicant. These are the people who has the evil root of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why this will lead to negativity or karma, downfall. That's why the basic five precepts you must keep is for your own good, is to protect your life, is to give you the good condition to avoid evil. Then you have to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, to develop the wholesomeness so that your life becomes beautiful because you reap what you sow. Then you have to meditate to purify your mind. Then you also develop through the meditation the law of mind. Law of mind is under citta niyama. Citta niyama is the dependent origination, telling how you function as a human being. How your mind state arise, dependent on certain mind state, then how they pass away and condition the subsequent one. Then you will understand clearly who you are, what you are, and what this mind is all about, and how you are conditioning the negativity, how you entangle yourself, and how you become miserable, afflicted through self-delusion. All you can see clearly when you train your mind to have mindfulness to see them. To see your mental intention and all things. And the last one is nature's law that governs all of truth. They call it Dhamma Niyama. So the Buddha is an expert in this tree. That's why he can perfect his teaching, then develop the enlightenment and teach it to us. So now I will zero in on the Four Noble Truths. And because of this five nature's order, the Buddha said, if you want to understand life, you have to understand the secret of life that governs all of life and existence. Based on the three spiritual truths, he came out with this final summary, which is the essence of his teaching. He said, this whole universe, all of life and existence, whether it's the mundane or the supramundane, he can summarize them into Four Noble Truths. And when you understand this, you understand life perfectly. Yeah. And you know the secret of life. You will know how to live life, transcend life. Yeah. The First Noble Truth explained to us the reality of life and existence, the prevalence of suffering. The Buddha says, suffering is everywhere. You don't have this understanding, this teaching. And these are the reality, he said, that will affect you, that will create suffering in you or affliction in you. And what are these eight? The first four is very easy to understand, and most people have heard of it before, especially Chinese. Birth, old age, sickness, and death. But the problem with most Chinese is they don't want to talk about all these things, because they say, especially now near Chinese New Year time, Choi, don't talk about death. He said, we talk about prosperity, good life, making money. But the reality will arise, because if you live long enough, the Buddha said you have to confront birth, old age, sickness, and death. And these are very traumatic. After having gone through life, you will know birth of a newborn baby. Upon birth, what happened? Because of birth, there is old age, sickness, and death. Isn't it? There is suffering. The birth process itself is suffering. The mother suffered a lot, having to carry the baby for 10 months. Then, the first delivery, that birth itself is so much pain and suffering for the mother. Then when the baby came, the first thing it do is cry. Then after that, it grew up, confront life, and have to face the reality. Then as you grow old, you become miserable. Your organs start to fail you. You become very weak, very fragile, like very useless. That's why you talk to all these old people. They envy you. They felt so miserable. Now it's so useless, so stupid, so full of sickness and disease. Oh, then they, through their thought recall, last time when I was young, I can do this, I can do that. Now I'm a useless. Then their mind become very upset because they cannot understand all this reality. They cannot come to terms with all this reality. Then when they are diagnosed with disease and sickness, nowadays, especially cancer and all those things, or HIV, stroke, heart attack, and many, many more of this funny type of traumatic disease, it is really suffering. It can trigger so much fear, worry, anxiety. Then death of a loved one, that can be really miserable. Then death can occur in many ways. Not necessarily you must live until 80, 90, only you die. Nowadays, many premature death, some die very young. And because of accident, disease, tsunami, or even earthquake, even snatch death, it can just trigger off. So what is life? It's so fragile. This form of mind is very fragile. Anything not correct, the slightest, can just cause it to separate and lead to death. Then the fifth one, the Buddha said, is when there is separation from your loved one and prized possession that you believe you own, you hold on to dearly, like your wealth, your money, your possession, your career, your business, your whatever antique or what that you hold on to dearly. Yeah. Separation can happen in many ways. Yeah. Your loved one, through accident, through death, through disease, they can separate from you. Or through what they call nature's disaster, they can also separate from you. Then, of course, later on, natural death. Then not only death, separation. Separation can come in the form of relationship breakdown, especially divorce, or relationship failure, jilted and all those things. It can be very traumatic. Many of you who have experienced separation, you will know, sometimes forced separation from your loved ones due to crisis, economic activity or what. Then when there is economic crisis, also same. Your investment can be just gone overnight. If you make a wrong call, you make a wrong decision, then due to certain economic condition, your whole of your wealth, you can be wiped off, especially during economic crisis, currency crisis, and also during war and other things. All of your wealth can just overnight gone. Like the Kuwaiti, when Iraq attacked overnight, they lost their sovereignty. The whole government and the people lost everything. So all this will allow you to see clearly the reality of life existence. Then the Buddha said the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like in the career field, you got bosses that are not so friendly, sexual harassment, then management by fear and harassment. So all this, then in the school, bullies, the students are not exempted from. Then when you go out in the street, you have to confront the snatch thief and all those things. Then stepmother, stepfather. Then you got a lot more of those people whom you don't like unfriendly neighbor, unfriendly people, mother-in-law, father-in-law, and all those things. Then sometimes your own children. Through anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, or whatever. Then the seventh one is when you cannot get what you want, when your expectations are not met, when things don't go your way, you become miserable. You expect to be promoted, but you are not promoted. Somebody else whom you think less deserving get promoted. You expect your loved one to understand you, to remember your birthday, but it didn't happen. Then there is a lot of other expectation too. You expect your own brothers and sisters to be closer to you, friendlier to you, than your thought project and think otherwise. That's how you can become miserable. When things don't go your way, you cannot get what you want. You develop a lot of envy, jealousy, suffering, misery. So the Buddha said, these are the reality. In modern term, the Buddha used another word. The Buddha used traditional words, sorry, but in our modern society, you cannot use the same word to our younger generation. They don't want to listen to you, understand? They will tell you, daddy, mommy, enough. I don't want to listen to all this bullshit. We go, what is all this? But when you relate to them modern terminology, they will listen to you. You wait till they get into trouble, then they will listen to you. When their girlfriend dump them, or then when they become miserable over their relationship, very often, very common, that's the time. This is what separation means. This is what the Buddha meant. When there is separation from the one you love, and you cannot get what you want, and now you are confronting all this reality. Then he look at you. Then when he got disease, sickness, and all those things, or when he got accident. So this is the reality. Then when they get married, when the first child come out, they very anxious. To you, he say, my grandchildren only, but yours is direct, your own son. You have to make sure you have the money to see them through the education, everything. Then they will think differently. But last time when you support them, sacrifice for them, they take for granted, most of them. So now you say, it's your turn to reflect back. Then you understand how your parents sacrificed for you, gave you life, did so much thing for you, provide for you, care for you, love you. Then they learn. Then later on as they grew up, they will experience what you experience, how you go through your old age, how you develop the sickness, then how they worry for you, how they care for you. Then you tell them, this is the reality, don't have to worry. One day you will also have to confront if you live long enough. But if you want to free from all this, very easy, you tell him or her, you learn this teaching. That time they learn this teaching. He say, Papa, Mama lucky because I know this teaching, that's why I got no more fear, no more worry, no more anxiety. And now I can be at peace with everything. Where the Buddha's teaching is very beautiful. He said, 5 daily contemplation, you have to contemplate. The Buddha said, this body is not you. You agree or not? You won't agree, yeah. How can this body not be? I want to laugh, I laugh. I want to jump, I jump. I want to commit suicide, also can you say not me? The Buddha say, make our element only. How can it be you? Understand not? So the physical body is definitely not you, because element. Or then you say, maybe the consciousness is me. Is the consciousness really you? He break down the consciousness into 4 aggregate. Your consciousness can do these 4 things. It can feel hot or cold. It can perceive things. It can arise mental activity, thought process, mental emotion, feeling and all those things. Then it can also become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So these are the characteristics or aggregates of mind, the consciousness. Then the Buddha said, is feeling you, is perception you, is mental activity or thought you, your views, your opinion, then the consciousness, are they you? That's why you say, I see. Who see? Who is the I? You will say, my I see. Without I cannot see, correct or not? EYE, not this fellow. My I see. Logical or not? Logical or not? Without I cannot see, right? Then I ask you, when you asleep with your eye open, why can't you see? You never see. The dead man, you open the eye, also cannot see. So I alone don't see, understand not? Then you say, maybe my mind see. Agree or not? Without mind cannot see, dead man cannot see. You ask the blind man with the mind, he also cannot see, understand not? Because he don't have the eye as an organ. That's why he's blind. So, what constitutes seeing? When I say I see, means what? You must have all the conditions that enable you to see. You must have the organ, the eye. You must have the consciousness, the mind. Upon contact, seeing consciousness arise. So, all these are conditions arising, like the physical experiment. The battery, the switch, then the light bulb. When everything is in order, the light bulb functioning, the battery, okay, in the right polarity, then you on the contact, what happens? The light bulb light up. Can follow, huh? This is equivalent to you become conscious of what you see, understand? So all this is nature's process, correct or not? Nature's law. You don't need a God to create seeing, understand? You don't have to have a God to make you see, understand? If you got no more organ, God also cannot do anything for you. So this is natural process upon contact. So your seeing consciousness is like what the Buddha said, condition arising, causal phenomena, depending on nature's law. So when you understand all this, then you ask yourself, this I is fictitious. It depends on all these conditions to arise. Any of these conditions not there, the seeing consciousness is gone, no more. Then the other way to understand is, feeling come and go. Good feeling arise and pass away. Did you die? You're still around there. When you are miserable, then you become unhappy. Then after that, all this gone, you become happy again. Did you die? If feeling is you, after that feeling, unhappy feeling pass away, you should die with it, isn't it? But then, feeling come and go. You're still around. That's why feeling is not you. Perception arise and pass away. You're still around. That's why they are not you. Your thinking, your thought process, your mental activity is the same. They arise and pass away. You are still around. Consciousness arise and pass away. You are still around. That's why this aggregate they are not you. If they are not you, the question is, how did they arise in you? And then, who are you? What are you? Go back and read the Grimoire. Then you understand. So this is to allow you to understand that all this reality, the Buddha said, in final summary of the first noble truth, is because when you deludedly believe this is you, without meditating on it or investigating on it, then you have self-delusion, then you suffer. This is the reality. All of life that you experience, anything you just describe, it will fall within the eight condition. That's why it's called the reality of life existence. Because these are reality that you will confront sooner or later as you go through life, you live long enough. And the other thing about this, what they call eight reality is, the Buddha said, this is the first noble truth. You are not the only person in the world that have to confront birth, old age, sickness and death. Each and every living being, as long as you live long enough, you have to confront. And when you confront this reality without this understanding, you suffer. So the difference between a person who suffer and a person who don't suffer is, the one who suffer don't understand, don't have this teaching. They grasp, they cling, they have self-delusion. Those who understand, they will not grasp, they will not cling. They will know how to accept their reality. Because they know this is not me. If I know this is not me, especially the physical body, then I can use it, correct or not? That's why I use the word use it, like a vehicle to take you around and help you arise a consciousness to experience the world. That's why the sixth wonder within your form and mind, the consciousness. So when you use it with understanding, you don't have to worry about you getting old, getting sick and die. And this is beautiful, isn't it? But if you don't know how to use it, you worry about it, then you become miserable. You don't know how to live life, you worry about life. You don't live because you worry, thinking that this is you. But if I know it's not me, then I can use. Then I won't lament. I won't worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. Because this is just element. It will go the way of nature. That's why the Buddha asks you to contemplate every day. The first three of the five daily contemplation, he said this body of ours is of the nature to get old, grow old, get sick, and one day die. For it has not gone beyond always sickness and death. Because these are made up of element, goes the way of nature, and it's not you. It's only element. And the consciousness, which is the knowing, is also not you. That's why don't be deluded by it. Then when you realize that they are all conditioned arising, like this physical experiment, the light bulb, the battery and the switch, then you realize everything is dependent originating. That's why that comes to the second right view, the dwelling, paticca-samuppada, dependent origination. So everything is conditioned arising, causal phenomenon. That's why it's impermanent. When condition like that, it will be like that. When condition arise, it will arise. When condition cease to be, it will cease to be. Then whatever that is dependent on condition is never a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why it's impermanent. And because it's impermanent, it's anatta, empty, non-self. You cannot grasp, you cannot cling. Otherwise, you suffer. That's why the three universal characteristics will become very clear when you meditate into it, when you contemplate and reflect into this teaching. Then the Buddha went on to the second noble truth. He said, there is a cause behind all your suffering. Your suffering only arises when you deludedly cling, grasp through self-delusion, sakkāya-ditthi, to this five aggregate of form and mind. That's why he said, craving is the cause of suffering. Craving, born of self-delusion. When you crave, one thing's your way. When you cling, you grasp and hold on to all these things that your mind perceive, feel, become conscious of your views and your opinion, you become afflicted. You become miserable. Then when you grasp, cling, and attach to your this body, you got craving. Craving for the sense experience. That's why they call three types of craving. Sensual craving. craving to be, that craving not to be. You got karma tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. So these are the cause of suffering, the Buddha said, the three types of craving. Then the third noble truth I already explained just now. The Buddha said, there is a noble truth that explained to you clearly that this suffering need not be. If you have this understanding, this teaching, and Nibbana, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now, can be realized. You don't have to wait till death. That's why this teaching is very different. It doesn't promise you eternal heaven only after death. This one is before you die. You can realize this. You can experience all this. Then the last one is the meditation. He said, if you follow this meditation, you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation that the Buddha taught, it will lead to the end of all suffering. You will become enlightened. Okay? So this is a summary of what the teaching is all about. So when you become enlightened, you will understand the supra mundane, means life of the enlightened being. That's why all of life, mundane and supra mundane, they are all summarized in this four noble truth, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. With this understanding, you read the seminar paper, you will understand, and you will appreciate his teaching a lot. Okay? Sadhu. So we end. Slightly accident. 10:34. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then you can make your aspiration. Sharing of merits with the devas. Akka satta cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkhantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata ca ammehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share this merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed ones. Idang me nyatinang ho tu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang ho tu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang ho tu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy always. We will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vasatukalena sasa sampati hitocha fito bhavatu lokocha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rainfall in due season, may there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Then now you make your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patia. By the grace of this merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Then we end.